Hello and welcome to House of Comments. Because you're here, it means you're a wonderful paid listener and we love you a lot. You also know that I'm Charlotte Henry and she is Emma Bunnell. Hello, hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. Not much going on in the world.
No, nothing at all.
Let's focus on a couple of domestic stories. The first of which, I think we should start with Louise Hay, because Sir Keir Starmer has lost his first cabinet minister. She's had to resign. I have to tell you, I find this whole story really weird. Let's just do the basics. Louise Hay has resigned as the transport secretary. Heidi Alexander has replaced her. Louise Hay was the youngest ever female cabinet minister, which is kind of cool. She's the same age as me. So I'm, feeling vastly inferior at this moment in time. She...
But to this be fair, Charlotte, you still have a job.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lou. That was a terrible thing.
She's an MP.
She is still an MP, absolutely.
She is still an MP. This is all rather messy, actually, isn't it, Emma?
It's a bit of a messy story. And I think a messy conclusion to a messy story.
Right. So let's do the basics. She was mugged in 2013. We know the mugging was real.
The mugging was real, yeah.
And sounds pretty horrible by all accounts. During the course of this mugging, Louise Hay thought she had had a work phone. She was working for Aviva at the time, stolen, and told the police so. She then discovered said phone, turned it on, which triggered, I think, her employer at the time realising this phone was on, which told the police, therefore, that something was not right. Now, she was given a conditional discharge by magistrates. She had pleaded guilty in 2014 relating to this and, as I say, given a conditional discharge, which is basically, as I understand it, the lowest form of sanction you can get.
Yeah.
She was there.
If you plead guilty, you have to get something.
Sure.
And this is essentially what is the legal equivalent of a slap on the wrist.
Right. So... she knew this, as we understand it, she told Sir Keir Starmer this in 2020, having been elected, having been brought into his, and then was brought into the shadow cabinet and then the cabinet. So then Sky and the Times have done a story on this over the weekend, and she's had to resign. So I'm really confused on this on multiple levels, and maybe you can unconfuse me. So if Sir Keir Starmer knew about this back in 2020, which I don't think anyone is disputing, are they?
I don't believe so, no.
Right. So he knew about it nearly, 4 or 5 years ago now, depending on when in which year he was told. And it obviously didn't concern him enough then to appoint her to the shadow cabinet with the hope she would one day be in his cabinet. What changed on Saturday?
So I have no insider knowledge. I'm just going to put that out up front. Here is my analysis. I don't. I mean, I wish I did. So here's my analysis of what changed. And I don't think it changed on Saturday, but Friday. She resigned very early Friday. Partygate, basically. When Starmer appointed her in 2020, and then probably never thought about it again, that was before all of the things that Starmer and Louise Hay, amongst other people, said about what happened during Partygate and law breaking, even law breaking that's just results in a fine, happening at the heart of government. And I think that what changed was the politics of it, not the moral choice one way or another. Now, I think it is perfectly possible, again, no insider knowledge here, that if this had been, for example, Rachel Reeves or Pat McFadden, one of the absolute inner core of Starmer's government, it might have been a harder decision to cut her loose. But as it was, Louise Hay had made a few mistakes over the last few months, in presentationally rather than politically, I think.
Explain that. What do you consider?
So there was the The stuff around the owners of P&O Ferries just before the big investment conference to which they were coming and going to announce they were investing billions of pounds, which I pissed off a lot of people and just kind of, you didn't need to say that. You certainly didn't need to say it then, kind of a way. So I think, again, I'm not saying, if they were going to sack her for that thing, they would have sacked her for that thing. But I think that when this came back to light, probably hadn't been at the top of Keir Starmer's thoughts about her because he'd already sort of thought about it and banked it before Partygate. Then we had Partygate and a lot of statements about propriety and the ways that
Behaving
MPs
well.
should behave and the ways in particular that cabinet members should behave. And then we had Louise Hay making news in ways that were unhelpful to the government, who is not a member of the absolute core Starmer team. I think that the decision was that she was easier to get rid of than she was to cling on to and go through days and days and days and days of headlines about. You can decide whether or not you think that's the right decision, but what I'm saying is I think that is the way that the decision went.
That
That
was
is
the
my analysis
analysis.
of the way the decision went.
I mean, a lot of what you say makes sense. I would respond in a couple of ways. First of all, Sir Keir Starmer has now set the bar pretty low for sackings and wrongdoing. An offence from a decade ago for which you got the most minimal punishment and pleaded guilty and apologised sets the bar quite low.
Well, yes. I mean, I think, and I want to park this particular offence for a moment.
Okay.
I don't think, I think it's quite an astonishingly post Boris Johnson's government thing to say that having any offence on your record is not a, low bar.
So I think it is a problem. I think that's fair. I don't think this is the most grievous offence I've ever heard
No,
of.
absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I, unparking this offence in particular, yeah, it feels very, very minor and like the times were troublemaking. But that is the world we live in. The times don't
Sure.
like the government very much. They were going to run it on the headlines, Keir Starmer, lawmakers or lawbreakers, blah, blah, blah,
Sure,
forever.
and it's obviously because of Sir
And
Keir
they ripped the
Starmer's
plaster off quickly.
and because of Sir Keir Starmer's background, and you're absolutely right about the context of Partygate, it makes all these things a lot harder to navigate. They obviously weren't mucking around. They didn't want to drag it out, and that was the end of that. As I say, I do think it's a much bigger problem for Sir Keir Starmer than I think it is for Louise Hay, although she may now never be able to come back into government. Part the sort of the liberal me believes in second chances and so on and so
Yeah,
forth.
that's
I,
the other part of this that I think
you
is
know, she's been
important.
elect. I think Sir Keir Starmer, I understand why, and I think your analysis is pretty accurate about why Sir Keir Starmer has acted how he does, did. I think they could have gone with a different approach of something like Louise Hay made a mistake a decade ago. It's not okay. She has apologized. She took the pled guilty and took the offence on the chin. We can all move on. I just don't see it as the equivalent of essentially taking the piss out of the entire country.
No, I agree. It's absolutely not equivalent. And I also agree with you that people should be allowed to have second chances. And that should be applied across the board. And there is a difference because Johnson, however much he might protest differently, actually went because his own MPs lost confidence in him.
Sure.
He didn't go over Partygate. He went in the end over Christopher Pincher.
Yeah, but it was all building up. It
But
was
it was
all.
all built up and the loss of trust and the endless lying and the repetition of lies and development of lies was what got him. That hasn't happened here. But again, I think there is a discipline at the core of the government that is possibly an overreaction to previous ill discipline, both within the Labour Party and within the Tory government, where they want to be not just different, but visibly different. And one way to be visibly different, I'm afraid, is to throw Louise Hay under the bus.
Well, hey, see what you did there.
I wasn't on purpose, but it was brilliant.
That's how good you are. Oh, I would end this, and I'm going to take your disagreement as read. I think this looks far worse and is far more troublesome for Keir Starmer than it is Louise Hay.
I think this goes away more quickly this way, and that's what they want right now.
Fair enough. We will see. If this is one of the more unpleasant sides of politics, I think you and I can both agree that on Friday we saw Parliament and politics at its best in the UK as MPs did the second reading of the Assisted Dying Bill. Now, you and I spoke about this before in quite some depth. I'll tell you that having watched some of the debate, part of my opinion has changed, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you and I were both pretty conflicted, I would say, and both, you know, pretty trepidatious on how we would approach this and how we would vote were we MPs. And I still feel like that. Now, I'm pretty certain on Friday I would have voted for the second reading to allow the debate to progress. I am, though, unconvinced now that I would vote for it to go become law at the end. Because for me, and I, you know, I actually have to tell you, you're going to laugh at me for this. One of the people that changed my opinion somewhat was Diane Abbott, whose speech was very good. For all the times I've criticised her, her speech was very powerful on Friday. And I have become, as this debate has gone on, increasingly upset about the idea of the state and doctors of the state killing citizens / patients. And I know that is a dramatic and crude way to put it.
Yeah, I think killing is the unfair word there in that sentence.
Yeah, perhaps, absolutely. And I understand that, but I think it changes the dynamic between patient and doctor, even though I understand that there are independent doctors required for this. That's very explicit. It can't be the doctor that has treated you, as I understand it. As I say, I find that I'll use different language, but I do find the idea of the state helping to end the life of one of its citizens very difficult. So that's kind of where I've got to.
I mean, that makes sense for you because you're quite a libertarian. So you want the state that you can fit into the pocket. But I think for me, it's very different considerations because I don't have the same relationship to the state that you do.
And that is part of it, absolutely.
So, I mean, that makes sense for both of us. For me, it's not really about the state's role one way or t'other. And it's not clear, frankly, whether this will be delivered on the NHS or delivered through private medical insurance at the moment. So, you know, you might get to have your libertarian third party boop a death.
No. I know you're being, you know, and that's fine. We need a bit of a light-hearted tone in such a difficult conversation. But I think my point around doctors also said, I think it is difficult. As I say, I'm deeply frustrated.
I mean, it's easy.
But equally,
the government at this point, having had it pass its second reading, and seen that it passed by with 70 votes, wasn't it? I think
it was close, but not that close.
Yeah. So
I'd call it close but decisive.
Yeah. I would probably take a grip on this now and say, put down some sort of government amendment that says we will set up a quick Royal Commission, not one of those ones that are just basically about kicking things 10 years down the line, not a social care style Royal Commission, to think about how this can be done well and properly and best. And if that amendment gets through, that's how the bill goes in the end to a Royal Commission to sort out how it's going to happen, which I think is probably where the sensible money would end up. Alongside that, there has been a commission set up on palliative care, which I think is very, very, very important.
That's been one of the best things to come out of this debate, we're now taking that very seriously.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think that's very good. I mean, I think in terms of your state intervention or not intervention, I think this comes back again to that different conception of freedom and the left conception of the state's role in freedom and the right's conception of the state's role in freedom. And the left's conception is the state is there to enable freedom from, in this case, torture and pain. And the right says, you know, I should be free from the state and it should not have a role in whether I live or die. And I think that ideologically, that those two are really incompatible. And that's probably, if you're going to take this down, and it hasn't been, as you say, Diane Abbott was one of the key people against this. So it's not a, maybe left-right is the wrong, maybe it's libertarian versus statist, but although it's not really just statist, it's more sort of liberal statist, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, all I would say is, despite my difficulties, I'd like to reiterate that I definitely were an MP, have voted for it on Friday.
Yeah.
Because I think it's, first of all, some of the speeches really were brilliant from all sorts of people, whether you agreed with them or not. I actually got to a point when I had the debate on at different parts of the day, whoever was speaking, I agreed with. And my view would change per the speech. So I would absolutely have voted on Friday for this bill to keep everything going.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a really important debate.
And I read a very good Facebook post by a friend of mine who is now an MP who abstained.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, if you'd asked me the day that I walked into Parliament off the back of my head, you know, what's your take on assisted dying, I would be in favour of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that this bill is, I couldn't vote for it, but I didn't want to see it defeated either. And I thought that was quite an interesting.
Yeah, I totally, and I absolutely understand that as well.
Yeah.
And I absolutely understand, which I think is the heart of your points, which are completely valid, which is that we're all horrified the idea of our loved ones, or indeed ourselves, ending our days uncomfortable, in pain, you know, tortured in your own body. We all cannot abide that. And I absolutely understand that. And that is why I have been genuinely bouncing between the two, because who could ever want that? Anyway.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, I do think it is essential that this is a choice that is made at the absolute end of life. You know, with the 6 months, I know 6 months isn't always 6 months, and you are people who go on much longer, but
sure.
Where one of the things that worries me is the mental health aspect that's creeping in some of the countries where this is available.
Very good point. Very good point.
You know, you may well be living in mental torment and torture, but you're physically going to live for a long time. And that, I think, is a step too far for the state to take your life. It is a point where the state should be doing a fuck ton more than they usually are to support you. But well, that does not
how
mean
how many times have you and I talked about the failure of mental health services in this country? We, you know, if the state is going to, I mean, I don't want to drag it down to this level, but the state, if the state is going to intervene in that, they should be intervening to make your life better.
Yes, and absolutely.
We need to provide better mental health services, not say, okay, you can't bear this anymore. Like,
yeah,
if you're, it's all, this absolutely is about physical
and, you
know,
if
health.
If you take that to its logical conclusion and think about, say, for example, someone with an anorexia.
Yes, I saw this point raised in Parliament. It was very important.
Yeah. You know, you wouldn't then say, oh, well, you clearly don't want to eat, therefore we praise your bravery.
No. It's the importance for those type of things is finding a cure that makes people's lives better.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Well, I was pleased to see Parliament like that, because we so often see.
Absolutely. And I have been worried about some of the tenor of this debate in some spaces, but actually that debate really was the best of Parliament.
It really was. Well, hopefully we will be able to continue in that vein on Friday, and we'll see you then.